Wright Day Player on 720 WGN. So few groups in rock and roll history can match the achievements of legendary rock and rollers, the Beach Boys. They've sold over 100 million records and charted over 80 songs worldwide, 36 of them top 40 hits in the U.S., the most by an American rock and roll band in history. The Beach Boys will be playing at Ravinia on Sunday, July 2nd, which if you've never seen them live, now's your chance to get your tickets right now at ravinia.org. And joining us to share his story and the band's legacy is music icon Mike Love. Mike, welcome back and happy summer to you.
Hey, Dave. Thanks for having me on the program.
Absolutely. Oh, man, I'm thrilled to be talking to you. I am a huge, huge fan. And what always intrigues me about you guys is there is a love for the Beach Boys music that has been unmatched and has crossed 3 to 4 generations.
Well, 172 shows last year.
It's amazing.
Yeah, it's pretty incredible. This year, probably around 150, and we're as you said, celebrating 50 years of Good Vibrations. I wrote that song with my cousin Brian 50 years ago.
Wow!
And in fact, it came out in the fall of 1966, and it went to number one, and we were voted the number one group in England, or Great Britain anyway, and number two being the Beatles, and 4 was the Rolling Stones. So
amazing. Yeah. That's amazing.
Yeah, it was an amazing year.
You know, when we're at barbecues at my folks, my dad's playing the Beach Boys in the summer in the backyard. I listen to it. I play it in the car. My 10-year-old knows all your songs. That's what I'm saying. It just crosses so many generations. People love your music.
I have a 20-year-old daughter, Dave, that would, before she could speak, she would toddle up to the record player and go, ba, ba, ba. She wanted to hear Barbara Ann.
That's awesome.
Also came out 50 years ago. Barbara Ann became a huge hit record for
wow.
us, along with the Pet Sounds album, which came out in 66. So this year is it's a golden anniversary of a lot of great stuff from the Beach Boys.
Absolutely. What are the early origins of the Beach Boys? You and the Wilson Boys were cousins, and you hung out a lot as kids, and you sang together.
A tremendous amount, actually. Every holiday, Thanksgiving, Christmas, Easter, any birthday or anything, always music was the central focus of any celebration that we would have as a family. And when my mother came to California along with her siblings, they were so poor. They came from Dust Bowl conditions in Kansas. My father's side came from rural Louisiana. At least my grandfather Love did. And these people, they didn't have any money, but they had music, especially the Wilson side of the family. My mom sang on the radio in the 1930s.
Wow.
It was a big deal. So music wasn't because we never went into music thinking we'd become famous or you know, make any money at it. We just love creating those harmonies together, and those harmonies are what distinguishes the Beach Boys from so many other groups. And it's because of the love of the music, nothing else.
Well, you did this for family fun. It was really family mm-hmm. get-together. So where did the idea come about that, hey, let's actually formalize this, let's create a band? How did that come about?
Well, my cousin Dennis and I would go fishing off the Redondo Beach breakwater, and we would talk, and we started talking about surfing, which I'd go with my high school friends. If the surf was up, we'd miss a few afternoon classes, to be honest, and we'd drive down to the beach and have a great time. And so surfing preceded the Beach Boys, you know. It was our high school experience growing up in Southern California, and that gave rise, that whole environment, you know, just living a few miles away from the beach, gave rise to the idea of doing a song about surfing, because there's this whole cult around surfing, the way you dress, the way some of the words you would use, and just your attitude in life and stuff. It was all like a little mini subculture mm-hmm. there in Southern California. So we decided to make up a song about it. And that was our first record called Surfin'. Our second one was Surfin' Safari. Third one was Surfin' USA. So each year,
yeah.
1961, 2, and 3, each year the whole phenomenon grew. And very quickly in the early to mid-60s, the Beach Boys became world-renowned.
Well, and you were the Pendletones at first. And I have to, because you kind of you created this music. So, you know, who were your influences? Because, you know, usually, you know, rockers will go back to blues and jazz, so forth. But you created this style of music. So who did you look up to?
Well, primarily, I think Chuck Berry, for me, was the biggest influence in terms of songwriting. But the Everly Brothers are a huge influence because of their beautiful blend.
Sure, right.
And the Four Freshmen were an amazing group of singers and performers back in the 50s. They influenced us because of their very sophisticated, close four-part harmonies. And so if you put those influences all together, along with doo-wop, you know, with the high parts and the low parts and the neat stories, those were the major influences, I would say, you know, other than growing up and doing, you know, church youth nights and sure. sing-alongs and stuff like that. So those were the major influences, Chuck Berry, the Everly Brothers, the Four Freshmen, and doo-wop itself.
So you create the song Surfin', and Candix Records, which was an independent label, released the song, but now under the Beach Boys. So how did you go for the Pendletones to the Beach Boys?
A fellow named Russ Regan, who was a record promotion man at the time and eventually became the head of a couple of big major record companies, he actually is the one who named us that. Pendleton Mills made these kind of woolen shirts that were plaid that you would wear over your T-shirt when you're at the beach to keep warm. So the surfers all wore the Pendleton shirts, Pendleton Mills. Mm-hmm. So we called ourselves the Pendletones, you know, but that didn't stick because when we heard Surfin' by the Beach Boys, we said, well, that's better than what we got. So we eagerly adopted the term the Beach Boys, and it made sense because, you know, we're all from that Southern California environment. Dennis Wilson and I and Al Jardine, we all had our surfboards and were we good surfers? That's debatable.
Okay.
But we were part of that culture, you know, part of that Southern California culture, and it became the very cornerstone of our success.
In the very beginning, how did you all decide who was going to do what exactly with the band?
I would sit down and write music with my cousin Brian. So he would sit at the piano. I would stand beside him with a notebook or some paper, and we would figure out the songs. He would come up with the chord progressions primarily. I would come up with the lyrics and the concepts. So because I was sitting there right with him writing the songs, it fell to me a lot of songs to sing the lead. So whether it be Surfin' Safari or Surfin' USA or California Girls or I Get Around or Fun, 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 any of those songs, I would sing the lead because we were writing them together. Mm-hmm. So he would be banging them out. I'd be singing along and I'd be coming up with the words or the hooks, like round, round, get around, I get around. I came up with that. So because he and I wrote them together, it fell to me to sing the lead on many of them. Of course, on the ballads, he would take the high part.
Sure.
I would take the low part, and Carl and Alan would be in between on something like In My Room or Surfer Girl or that kind of thing.
You released the second single, Surfin' Safari, back with 409, and soon thereafter you signed with Capitol Records, and Surfin' USA came out. Was that the song, Surfin' USA, that really got you national attention? Was that the big one?
Yeah, it was. It showed up in the charts in Israel, South Africa, Australia, Philippines, you know, all over Scandinavia. But it turns out Surfin' is very close to Surpin', which means drinking. So it was a drinking safari or drinking USA.
People love that, I'm sure.
to some people, yeah. I mean, it worked.
That's awesome. Now, I know the Beatles were on the Sullivan Show in 64, also on Capitol Records. It doesn't seem like they really made a big impact at all on what you guys were doing here because the hits just kept coming.
Well, it was an impact because they were so tremendously popular, and it was like an explosion of popularity. But right, like I was saying earlier, that, you know, in 1966, we had Good Vibrations. We were voted the number one group in Great Britain. So even at the height of Beatlemania stuff, the Beach Boys did, we were awed by their success and their creativity. as they were ours. You know, I mean, the Pet Sounds album really blew a couple of minds, and you know, John Lennon and Paul McCartney, they listened to it, and Paul said, oh my, what are we going to do?
That's awesome.
So they got busy with the Sergeant Peppers, and in the Rolling Stone magazine, they had a coffee table of the top 500 albums of all times or something. And number one is Sergeant Pepper's, and number two is Pet Sounds.
Yeah, exactly.
So I demand a recount.
Nice. Well, then, you know, I Get Around came. Fun was the other one. And I know I've heard you quoted as saying this, that you might have sang Fun now for like the 6,000th time.
Probably, close to it. I mean, we've done at least 5,500 shows over the last 55 years, so it's very likely that we have done it, because that was, you know, one of the earlier big singles. And we close our show with it. And I like to leave the people, leaving them think the concerts thinking, fun. They had fun.
When they came to see it. So, absolutely.
To me, that's pretty important. That's the whole idea about our show, is to create some positivity. And sure, we have some melancholy stuff, like if we'll sing The Warmth of the Sun or In My Room. But you know, there's some upbeat, real fun songs, you know, Help Me Rhonda, I Get Around, Fun, Surfing USA, all those.
Oh, they're all upbeat. You can't help but feel good when you listen to the music.
And that's the idea, because I've always called what we do a sonic oasis. There's a lot of problems in the world, a lot of problems in personal lives, and you know, and for a period of time to either play a song, play an album, or come to a concert, you know, we don't avoid emotion, that's for sure, because we've all experienced it, and we put it into our songs, God Only Knows, and you know, that kind of thing. But I think the music should be to uplift and entertain and bring happiness. That's my, you know, I like to accentuate the positive, even if it's something isn't fantastic.
Yeah.
You can usually find something good about whether it was, you know, falling out of love with somebody, or somebody didn't love you anymore. At least you had felt that feeling at one time. So there's a whole range of emotions that Beach Boys music touches upon, and I think we've gotten nothing but great positive feedback over the years from so many, you know, thousands
of
people.
Absolutely. And people do sing along to your songs. Does that bother you when they sing along, or does that kind of embrace you a little bit, that everyone just wants to be a part of the experience?
Well, not at all. I mean, there's some songs that are more sing along than others, like Help Me Run is
sure.
Kokomo, Aruba, Jamaica, Wanna Take
from
It.
Cocktail.
From Bahama, come
on. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh.
That's a huge sing along. Ooh, I Wanna Take It Down to Kokomo. You know, I mean, it's fun. Those songs are really fun to see, and Help Me Run to come on. Surfing USA, Inside, Outside USA. Everybody's singing along. It's a party. It's really fun. Now, there's other songs, like we're doing In My Room, people just sit and they listen. Or if we're doing The Warmth of the
Sun. Or Sway.
Listen.
You know, it just is being part of that experience. And you did so many live albums, too. You did the first live album ever to hit number one. In 1970, you guys signed a contract with Reprise, released a double album, The Beach Boys in Concert, that went gold. Your live albums were huge.
Well, you know what it is? The Beach Boys live, I mean, that's where it's at. I mean, records are great, and radio's great, and having your songs and soundtracks is wonderful, and it's all good. But the experience of a live concert where the music is being performed by the group that was involved in making it, and the energy between the audience and the performers is amazing. I find that, you know, multiple generations. I mean, grandfathers, grandmothers, and their children, their children's children. They'll all come out to a show, and they'll all enjoy the same music together as a family.
Over the years, there's been infighting, of course, with the band, and when you're part of a group, that does happen. And the stress of traveling and recording records and all this other stuff. And I know the answer to this already, but you've kept yourself pretty grounded for almost 50 years, and that's due to meditation. How did that all kind of come about?
In December of 1967, we were invited to go to Paris to do a UNICEF show as a fundraiser to help, you know, raise money for UNICEF for children through the UN. And there was a big gala in Paris, And during the rehearsals for that gala, we met Maharishi, and he then subsequently we got invited to learn TM or Transcendental Meditation from Maharishi, December of 67 in Paris. 2 months later, I found myself in India because at his invitation, none of the other guys went there, but Alan Jardine and I continued to meditate, whereas the Wilson brothers veered off into other lifestyle choices. Right. But Alan and I actually attended a TM teacher training course in like 1972, I believe it was. And so, yeah, I've been meditating ever since December of 67, gone to India, went to a six-month-long meditation course. You know, that there's a lot of ups and downs in any kind of business,
right,
any kind of life, any kind of relationship situation. But what I've found is meditation has helped you cope with the stress of it and not let it grip you and destroy you, which is a really powerful tool. But it also gives you clarity and energy, because you lower your metabolism to a level of rest twice as deep as deep sleep. And that's profound. I know it goes by pretty fast in English, but when you say twice as deep as deep sleep, there's a profound restfulness, a restful alertness. That's profound. I mean, that's the reason why at 74 years old, I was able to do 172
right.
concerts last
exactly.
year.
Exactly. But that does anchor you, and it does, you at least know that's there for you once or twice a day when you need to go to. And just like you said, you know, some members ventured off to drugs and alcohol and so forth, and that's what they look forward to provide them with relief. But this is obviously a much healthier choice, and it's something that again, it you know it's there every single day when you need to go to it.
Yes, it's been a blessing. It really has.
Yeah. Fast forward a little bit to the 80s, you lost one of the originals, the loss of Dennis.
That's right. Well, talk about lifestyle choices. You know, he was just, I mean, he would go into rehab for like an evening.
Yeah.
But he was a rebellious person. I mean, I don't know. It was sad to see, because, you know, on one hand, he was a great guy. On another other hand, he just got gripped by alcohol and drugs, you know. Just,
yeah.
It's sad. I mean, but it happens. It happens to many families. And we're none of us completely untouched by it, because it affects an entire family, you know, and on a more national level, it affects a nation, you know, and it's so sad. And that's why I'm so, you know,
focused
what
on,
do you call it? Well, grateful to have the relief that comes through meditation. And, you know, so I only wish that my cousin had. You know, it's ironic that Dennis was the one that called us from Paris to say, Maharishi is going to teach us to meditate. And even when he was drunk, he would say, let's meditate.
You know? Wow.
So he did know the value of it, but he couldn't overcome the addiction.
Did you think after the struggles with Brian, the loss of Dennis, and then the late 90s with the loss of Carl, that this was ever coming to an end? It was just you, Brian, and Al, or did you know you had to carry on? I mean, you're the iconic voice, and as long as you're there, I think that will always continue and happen. But did you ever think at a time that this wasn't going to continue?
No, because the music is immortal.
Yeah.
The music, I mean, it's amazing. You know, like, for instance, Full House. John Stamos is our good friend, and he sat us on Full House because he loves the Beach Boys.
That's right. He's toured with you guys. I forgot about that. Yeah,
he has, and he does on occasion when he's not busy doing what he does for a living, mainly. Mm-hmm. But so he's been a huge supporter of the Beach Boys, and by virtue of his having us on this show, we've been recognized by children, you know, year after year. I mean, so the Full House reruns, you never don't see Full House on the TV.
It's true.
I mean, it's always on.
It's true.
So, you know, something like that. I mean, the music just keeps being reinforced and introduced to successive generations, and so it's really special.
The Beach Boys, Mike Love. Mike, I can't tell you what a thrill it was to spend some time with you tonight.
Well, thank you so much for having me on your program. It's wonderful. WGN rocks.
Thank you. I think so, too.